Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the ABN AMRO analyst call held on the 23rd of August 2013. Throughout today's conference, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the conference, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any of the participants have difficulties hearing the presentation, please press the star followed by the zero on your telephone for operator assistance. I would now like to hand the conference over to your host, Gerrit Zalm. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Welcome to the analyst call. After my introduction, Kees van Dijkhuizen will take the floor, and then Wietse Rehorn. The results for the first half year were more than 800 million net profit, a bit lower than the same period last year. The result is influenced by two large impairment releases related to our Greek exposure, which we had in the first quarter, and the recovery of a Madoff exposure, which is booked in the second quarter. And this shows that prudent impairment practice in earlier years now pay off. Excluding these two releases and a few other special items, and you can find the list in the press release, net profit would have been 510 million, and that's substantially lower than in the first half year of 2012. The main driver was the sharp rise in impairments, especially for small and medium-sized enterprises, and to a lesser extent, an increase in mortgage impairments. Despite this, retail, private and commercial banking recorded a significant increase in their operating results due to several factors, including higher margins on savings and loans, as well as lower costs. Higher pension costs and disappointing top-line results in merchant banking further impacted the results. Looking at the return on equity, this was annualized 12%, but adjusted for special items, the return would have been about 7.5%, which is lower than last year. Capital ratios improved. Our core capital ratio is now 13.3%, and if we look at a fully phased-in figure, we have a figure of 11.5%, so that is comfortably above minima we expect. In summary, we have a mixed picture. Positive developments are the strong growth in net interest income and fees, cost containment, except for the pension cost, and a further increase in our capital ratio. Offsetting this were the high risk costs, especially for SMEs and to a lesser extent for mortgages, and this reflects the weak economic circumstances in the Netherlands. Now I give the floor to Kees.
Thank you very much, Gerrit. Before starting, I would like to point out that we published a short presentation on our website this morning. During this call, we will use this presentation. Furthermore, we have the interim financial report, including interim financial statements, which was also published this morning, and there will be published later today a full investor presentation. If I move to slide 3 on operating income, we saw positive developments in net interest income and net fees. Net interest income increased by 6% year on year, driven mainly by higher margins on mortgages and corporate loans. Net fees and commissions increased by 5%, driven by increased client activity in private banking and higher fees in clearing. Compared to these positive developments, the development of other non-interest income was disappointing, with a sharp decline of around 400 million year on year. Excluding special items, as mentioned, are in the press release, Annex 2, for both years, the decline would have been around 150. Mainly due to lower results in trading sales activities and almost actually all asset classes within markets, which also suffered from some missed income from non-client-related equity derivatives activities we terminated this year. All in all, operating income decreased 6%. When we adjust, however, for special items, operating income would have increased marginally by 1%. Then if we move to slide 4, on costs and impairments, we see an increase in operating expense of 4%, or 7% excluding special items, and this 7% increase is driven entirely by higher pension costs, which amounted to 169 million in the first half this year. It's an increase of around 7.5% of our operating expenses, adjusted for special items. The cost-income ratio deteriorated to 64, however, compared to the first half of last year. However, excluding special items, the cost-income ratio in the first half of the year would have been 61, and for the second quarter, the figure excluding special items is 59. And as you know, our target is 60% by 2017. Cost-income ratio particularly improved for retail, private and commercial banking, reflecting the impact of ongoing cost savings and improved revenues. The last graph on slide 4 shows you developments in impairment charges corrected for releases related to the sale of the Greek exposure and the Medov recovery. And of course, we are happy with those releases, as said, due to prudent impairment policies in the past. The impairment charges, excluding special items, increased by 38%. And that reflects the subdued economic conditions affecting particular SMEs and to a lesser extent also the mortgage portfolio. Cost of risk adjusted for special items remained elevated and increased year on year to 127 bips, coming from 90 bips in the first half last year. If we look at the mortgage portfolio, analyzed the impairment charges there are increased from 23 in the first half of this year, from 11 bips in the first half last year, and in the second half last year it was 21, by the way. Those bips are over outstandings, so not under over risk-weighted assets like the 127 I mentioned before. But we will comment later on further developments in asset quality. If we go to slide 5, on the segment results, there's a short overview of the contribution of different business segments to the result, and as you can see, both retail and private banking recorded an increase in net profit, retail banking still being the biggest contributor to the results of the bank. Commercial banking showed a strong increase in operating result, but this was more than offset by higher impairments. Merchant banking was impacted by special items and lower operating result. ECT and clearing, our two areas of growth, as you know, in our strategy within merchant banking, showed a stable contribution to the results, however, but markets in general saw lower revenues in most asset classes. Net profit increase in group functions was mainly the result of the Greek and Medov impairment releases. Slide 6, the balance sheet. Moving to the balance sheet, I will only focus on the main items. Compared with year-end 2012, total assets grew by 9 billion, driven by increased client activity in securities financing. Those activities are typically decline at the end of the year due to lower client activity. Apart from the securities finance activities, the loan portfolio was largely unchanged. The CNMB loan portfolio increased marginally, while the mortgage portfolio decreased by 1 billion as a result of additional redemptions and lower new production. The growth in CNMB was predominantly in ECT. Total clients deposits grew over the first 6 months to 207 billion, an increase of nearly 7 billion compared to year-end 2012, and it's largely attributable to retail banking in the Netherlands, as we observe customers increasing their savings buffers in response to the economic uncertainty. Our online MoneyU subsidiary also showed an increase in deposits in Germany and Belgium of around 2 billion. Finally, total equity increased, driven by the profit of the period, partially offset by the payment of the dividend over book year 2012 and the call of 210 million of preference shares. And if we go to slide 8, capital, compared to year end, the core tier 1, as Gerrit already mentioned, and tier 1 ratio showed a considerable improvement due to the addition of net profit and an RWA decrease of around 6 billion. Partially offset by a potential dividend payment over the year 2013 of 300 million. For prudency reasons, we need to deduct possible dividend payments from capital. And also, the total capital ratio improved to 90.2%, despite the call of some lower tier 2 instruments that were not eligible capital under Basel III. On a fully loaded basis, Gerrit already referred to it, the Core Tier 1, the CET1 ratio would be 11.5, already touching the range of 11.5-12.5 that ABN AMRO targets for 2017. And that's on a fully loaded basis, so no transition. The leverage ratio based on Tier 1 capital under Basel III rules, phase-in rules, was 3.5 by the end of June 2013. And the amended treatment of securities finance under CRD IV had a positive impact on the leverage ratio. The Basel III fully loaded leverage ratio is 3%. Then slide 9, liquidity. Moving to liquidity, there are a couple of positive developments. The loan-to-deposit ratio further improved to 122.5, driven by an increase in retail deposits. Also, the LCR increased to 91, I think it was 69 1 year ago, in line with our internal target to reach a 90 to 95% LCR by the end of 2013. And 2014, we expect an LCR of at least 100%. A total of nearly 6 billion long-term unsecured funding was raised during the first 6 months, bringing the average maturity of all outstanding long-term funding to 4.6 years. And now Wietse will comment on asset quality.
Thank you, Kees. Let's move then to slide 11. I'll briefly update you on the asset quality of the credit portfolio. The economic environment in the Netherlands remained challenging, with unemployment and the number of bankruptcies rising. Lower domestic spending has led to ongoing pressure on revenues for SMEs, and these negative developments are particularly visible in the amount of assets managed by our Financial Restructuring and Recovery Department, which has seen an increase in inflows in the past year, with at present around 20% of SME loans now being managed by this department. Furthermore, the amount of loans that return to the regular business once restructured has also decreased. Deterioration of the portfolio is evident in nearly all sectors, but particularly in retail, real estate, construction, transportation and horticulture sectors. If we look to the main risk parameters on this slide, you see an improvement in almost all past due ratios and somewhat of a mixed picture in relation to the impaired ratios, and I will comment on that actually. For the commercial loan portfolio, both the past due and the impaired portfolio have decreased. The past due decreased due to stricter management of overdraft limits. The impaired portfolio decreased mainly due to write-offs and the releases of the Greek exposures, the recovery of the Medef exposure. We see write-offs most visibly in the sectors industrial transportation, retail, and industrial engineering. If I move to slide 12, a couple of remarks around real estate, which is part of the commercial loan portfolio. The real estate portfolio decreased slightly, around 200 million, result of some conservative policies applied, as well as stricter new loans underwriting. You will see that for the first time, we mention here an original obligor exposure at default figure. In our risk disclosures, the real estate portfolio under this view amounts to 14.5 billion at June 30th. This includes, however, 4.5 million exposure at default of social housing loans, of which 60% is guaranteed by the government, at least government-backed parties. And this guarantee explains the difference between the 14.5 billion AID and the 11.7 billion resultant obligor. Impaired exposures represented approximately 5% of total portfolio, and only 47 million of impairment charges were booked in the first half of this year. The coverage ratio is at 64%. Then move to slide 13, a couple of remarks on our mortgage portfolio. The Dutch housing market continued to slow down in the first half with further declines in house prices, almost 5% compared with the year end. However, there are some positive signals, for example, from the Home Owners Association's market indicator showing increased affordability of housing due to falling house prices, low interest rate, and a more expensive rental market. Voluntary mortgage repayments continued to rise in the first half, increasing 44% on the first half of last year. And these additional repayments are the result of higher risk awareness among our clients and a low interest rate offered on savings. Despite the client repaying mortgages, actually the average loan-to-market value of the mortgage portfolio increased to 84% compared to 82% at the year-end, mainly due to the decline in house prices. The mortgage portfolio that is above 100% loan-to-market value increased slightly to 23%, which was 21% at year-end. What we mentioned, I think, for the first time now is that of the total mortgage portfolio, 23% is 100% interest only at a half year, and of that is 1% of that total mortgage portfolio is 100% interest only mortgages with a loan to market value above 100%. In the past, those interest-only mortgages were provided mostly to clients that also had credit balances, savings, investment accounts with ABN AMRO. As explained also in our Q1 call, we have since a couple of years, very proactively approached and contacted clients that have a high loan-to-market value to make them aware of the risks and to provide budget coaching and give them advice on possible options like higher repayments or changing to annuity mortgages. And actually, those proactive actions have covered already around 17% of our mortgage clients. If we look to the past due exposures, it decreased by 250 million, mainly as clients use their holiday allowances to pay off arrears or mortgages, but also because we see the impact of the mortgage care team continuing to provide budget coaching to clients in arrears. To put actually this all in perspective, bear in mind that of all our clients, 98% are paying their mortgage in time. Impaired exposures increased by roughly 230 million as a result of the deteriorated economy leading to higher unemployment. The impaired mortgage portfolio was 1.7 billion. In terms of clients, this is roughly 6,500 clients. Put it in perspective, that is less than 1% of our mortgage clients. In the first half of this year, we had to initiate a home sale process for 0.1% of those clients who were in a more difficult situation. And of that, and of all those home sale processes, a quarter ended up in a forced sale. And to bear in mind there, that is around 230 clients. Lastly, I'll give some background on the recovery of the Madoff exposure. In the past, ABN AMRO had provided loans to various funds affected by the Madoff fraud, with an exposure at that time of around 1 billion. When the fraud was unveiled in 2008, we have fully impaired these exposures. We sold recently some collateral on part of these exposures, resulting in a recovery of 253 million before tax. And from the original impairment, we have now recovered around 40%. To conclude my part, before giving back to Gerrit, we expect impairment charges, excluding special items, to be higher in the second half of this year compared to the first half, and for the full year, clearly above the levels of last year. That concludes my overview from a risk management perspective. Pass over back to Gerrit for some concluding remarks.
Okay, thank you, Wietse. I close with some observations on the Dutch economy because that has a large impact on the results of the bank. If you look at 2013 as a whole, we think it will be a year of economic decline. GDP may shrink by 1%. Nevertheless, there are signs that we may be at the start of a modest recovery. House prices seem to be bottoming out, and demographics support a structural growing demand for housing. And the international environment is improving. The Eurozone showed positive growth figures for the second quarter. The Dutch competitive position is strong, and that should enable the economy to profit through increasing exports. The decline in long-term interest rates seems to have come to a halt, and that is good news for our pension funds. On balance, we expect a gradual recovery of the Dutch economy in the remainder of the year and also into 2014. It will, however, be a gradual and modest recovery because austerity measures are to be expected for 2014 and that will contain domestic demand. So our expectation for 2014 is a growth around about 0.5%. And for the bank, it will mean that external circumstances will not be very helpful for the coming 1.5 years. The SME impairments will stay elevated. What we can do as a bank to influence our results is to focus on top-line performance across all product lines, strict cost management, a strict intake process for new loans, and controlled growth of our international activities. Thanks for your attention, and I'm now handing you back to the operator.
Thank you. If any of the participants would like to ask a question, you may now press the star followed by the one on your telephone. And if you wish to cancel the request, please press the star followed by the two. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received, and there will be a short pause whilst participants register for a question. Thank you. And the first question comes from Cor Kluis from Rabobank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Cor Kluis of Rabobank. I've got a few questions. First of all, concerning the risk-weighted assets, which came down strongly Q2 versus Q1, due to the application, of course, of the advanced modeling. Question about that, is there more to come, or is everything at this moment at the advanced modeling, or is some refinement still required, and what might the impact of that be going forward? So that's my first question. My second question is about the commercial bank. You mentioned, I think, for the first time that 20% of the SMEs are in the intensive care, basically. That's, I think, somewhat higher than other banks show in the Netherlands. Can you explain why that is the case? Is that another definition, or is there something different in that respect? And also related to that, you mentioned the impairments, of course, in Q2 were 275 million in the commercial bank, which is almost 4% annualized. Were there some exceptional items in this, or maybe you can give some guidance on the impairments for the commercial bank separately for the second half of this year? And my final question is about funding. You mentioned that the duration of the funding is 4.6 years. Is that now in line with the target, or based on what happens at this moment with interest rates, would you still like to lengthen the funding duration a little bit further going forward? That were my questions.
Okay, this is Wietse. Thank you for the question, Cor. I will respond to the first two questions. As to the risk-weighted assets, indeed, I think also in the last the Q1 figures there were some volatility in those numbers, and I explained there that we were on a path to advanced models as to credit risk, and indeed that we have done. That is exactly the reason why you have seen coming down the credit risk risk-weighted assets with quite a magnitude of around 7-8 billion. If your question is what could we expect for the future, two answers. Of course, you never can exactly predict what happens exactly with the risk-weighted asset impacts of models. However, what we do see, if we look to the market risk element of it, there we are still working on an integration path towards advanced, which is called the EMA modeling environment. And there you may expect, indeed, as a result of conclusion of that operation, a decrease of the risk-weighted assets. Your question as to the assets under management within financial restructuring recovering being approximately 20% of the volume, not clients, but the volume of commercial banking. Bear in mind that we have in our financial restructuring recovery department also loans which are not impaired. And the reason for having in an early stage those loans into our restructuring department is that we want to be at the first signals very clear as to how to restructure loans. So this is somewhat of a precautious measure. You cannot not therefore compare this number with other numbers. Your question as to is it incidental, is it Well, what else? Well, I can tell you it is actually across all sectors within SME. It has to be said, of course, that it's mainly concerning their SMEs who are focused on the Dutch market. But there we see across all sectors issues which are now, after 4 or 5 years, popping up here. The guidance for the second half would be that the SME impairments will be higher than what we have seen in this first half.
Okay.
With respect to funding, the 4.6 maturity you mentioned, that's in line with our target, which is over 4 years.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Bernard from Kepler. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. It's Benoît Pétrarque from Kepler Chevreux. Yeah, three questions on my side. The first one will be on the net interest income, plus 6% in H1. You have mentioned that you see higher margins on loans. Could you talk a bit on the outlook on the margins on the asset side? So mortgage, but also SME, and also talk about the, you know, your view on the margins on deposits. I think the whole sector has repriced quite sharply in H1. So do you think the market will remain disciplined? And if yes, I mean, do you see more downside for the savings rate from the levels where we are now? That's the first question. The second question is again on asset quality. I think you gave your guidance on H2, but could you be more specific on 2014 based on your GDP growth expected? I mean, are we going to see a significant decrease of loan loss provision across the board, or do you think it's going still to be at relatively comparable to 2013? And linked to that, we have seen pretty sharp decrease again on risk-weighted assets. I know it's to move to model, advanced models, but there are some regulators which seems to be concerned on the amount of risk-weighted assets on both mortgages and corporates, like the Danish. I mean, do you think that's a risk as far as Dutch banks are concerned, or is Dutch regulators still very relaxed on risk-weighted assets? And then the last question will be on leverage ratio. It seems to be the biggest constraint to the balance sheet. Why do you think it will move going forward? I mean, it looks like capital is at a good level now, but do you think it will mainly come from balance sheet reduction? And it's probably part of the equation of lower mortgages. But you know, can we expect some negative growth of the total size of the mortgage book? And will that help to improve the leverage ratio? And then final question on leverage is you gave the 3% fully loaded. Do you include actually Tier 1 in that, or is that just core leverage on the Basel III? I know that you can include Tier 1 in the definition, but some banks are giving both ratio core and including Tier 1. Thanks.
To start with the net interest income, thank you very much for the question. I think the outlook actually we expect it to be positive. In the sense that we see the repricings actually both in the mortgage book and in the SME book being adding to the net interest margin actually every month. That's what we've seen. And although we do not have outlooks officially, of course, but that's what we've seen, and we did not see some change in that, say, during the last period, and we do also not expect that going forward. We, of course, do not know if the market stays disciplined with respect to deposits and repricing. However, we think that is the case. But deposits, I think, have been repriced lower margins, and that is, I think, the situation which will continue also in the rest of the year. So also the margin there will, we expect, not improve much further as it did in the first half, but at least stay at this level or improve a bit. With respect to, shall I take the leverage ratio?
Yes,
that you then
reach? Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
The leverage ratio, I think, is indeed an important ratio also for banks in general in the discussion. We do not expect that it has a negative effect on our mortgage business. Of course, look at it going forward and perhaps might look into the instruments we use at the moment within our capital. We have a lot of Tier 2 instruments and a bit less of Tier 1. And as you know, the Tier 1, indeed, at least the Basel III eligible Tier 1, you can use also for the leverage ratio. We might look into that. As said, also with respect to this 3%, we know that it's also people also need to look at the business model you use. So if you use mortgages, which we think are, although of course we mentioned figures also on impairments, if you compare the impairments to the margins, it is still profitable business. So we think that if regulators, and they will do that, we expect take into account the risk of these, of for instance, our mortgage book, that will be a positive one. Although, of course, you mentioned Danish or Sweden, there might be some increase with respect to risk weight. It's now 12, I think we have, and it could go up to 15 or something, but I mean that will not hamper basically this business line. So we are aware of it, but we do not foresee large decreases of our balance sheet as a result of this.
Just to finalize on this, you seem to have only 1 billion of Tier 1 eligible on the Basel III. Huh? That's the case.
That's correct. We have 1 billion Tier 1 hybrid that's not taken into account in the fully loaded.
Okay.
So the figure we mentioned, 3, is not including this 1 billion, and we have around, I think, well, that's not relevant for the leverage ratio. We have 6 Tier 2, but that,
Okay.
Let me comment on your other question as to the asset quality guidance for 2014. That is too early. We have given you some guidance as to the second half of this year, but it's fair to say that we do expect that also 2014 will be a difficult year, given the circumstances, especially in the Netherlands. Your question as to risk weight, discussions around that on mortgages, I think also the case alluded already a little bit on that. At this moment, we don't have any indications from the Dutch Central Bank that a risk weight there should change. But what will happen in the future, we don't know, of course.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Guillaume from Exam BNB. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. I've got two questions. The first one relates to the NSFR. Could you explain why it has deteriorated from 108 to 101, despite the fall in the loan book and the increase in the deposit and the issuance that you've done? And the other question relates to your liquidity buffer. Could you tell us how much it yields as a percentage of the 67 billion of liquid assets? And where is the, because I'm not too familiar with your structure, where do you book the revenues from the liquid assets buffer? Thank you.
Shall I start with the question around the net stable funding ratio? Indeed, it dropped a little bit down compared to year-end. Reason is a reduction in available stable funding, mainly recalled the senior guaranteed and sub-debt of 2.6 billion and a shift to an issued debt from, let's say, the longer than 1 year bucket to the shorter one. And we saw on the required stable funding part a increase mainly in equity positions around 4.3 billion. That actually is the answer I can give you here. The second question, I think, Kees, it's up to you.
Excuse me, but could you repeat that question? Because
I just wanted to know the liquid assets buffer, how much does it yield, and where do you book the revenues from this? Is that in the group functions or split in the different divisions?
In group functions. 67 is in group functions indeed, booked.
Okay, and what is the yield on the average liquid buffer?
Well, we do not disclose that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from J.P. Lambert from KBW. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. I would like to come back to the asset quality and have to a series of themes. The first one is, can you indicate the level of restructured loans you have currently which are not impaired? Because you seem to be quite active with the SME sector, so if you could give an indication. Also, you are actively negotiating with your customers on a mortgage loan. So that's the first one. The second one is, how do you treat the restructured loans in terms of categories of risk, if you want, in your book, and what are the treatments you associate with that? Thank you.
The answer can be quite straightforward, actually. As to treatment, it's either we have an impaired loan or we have a non-impaired loan. Of course, we are very aware of the legislation and accounting issues around forbearance. We are studying that. There are, of course, changes there to that legislation as well, so we need to comply there in due course. It's good to mention, I think, and I'm not quite sure whether we mentioned anything there in the analyst presentation, that as to the mortgage loans, what we do in the mortgage care teams in order to be in a very early stage with the client to discuss various options, especially when there is a residual debt situation, although that in itself is not a problem unless there is a divorce situation or unemployment, whatever. What we then do actually is, in a situation where the loan is not impaired, not even past due, we are simply discussing various options to move the client towards another repayment scheme like an annuity, mortgage, etc. Now, you can imagine that we are also sometimes in a situation where there is a past due situation and you need to agree with the client on certain budget changes, but again, that we don't call restructuring. And in the sense of real restructuring, we only started actually very recently with what we called a pilot with a couple of hundred clients, which indeed are in a situation of past due almost 90 or impaired, to see what we can do there in terms of restructuring. And that exactly is now a topic which we also inside the bank take further to bring that about in what we call the forbearance. And I guess within due course we will be also able to make sure what that means in terms of official forbearance situations.
And regarding SMEs?
There, I think already I gave the answer that if we have an impaired loan, then the loan is impaired. And if there is a situation where the client is not ending up in a impaired loan portfolio, well, there is a normal situation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Albert Ploeg from ING. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. A few questions from my side. First one on the fully loaded core capital ratio. You're basically already at your lower end of your target for 2017. And also given the leverage ratio constraints that banks will basically face, including yourselves, I mean, what is basically the likelihood and let's say normalized dividend expectation? I saw that 300 million was taken into consideration in the first half. So basically payout ratio on reported profit of around 37%, which is close to your 40% objective. Well, let's say on the clean basis, it's closer to 58%. So any guidance on dividend policy would be appreciated. Second question on the mortgage risk-weighted assets. You basically do not see any indications to basically being forced to increase it by the regulator. But did you make yourself any changes in terms of assumptions for the probability of default or loss given default that has already resulted in higher risk-weighted assets on mortgages? And the third question, to be clear about the outlook for impairments, the second half clearly higher than the first half. Is that purely coming from SMEs, or are you still also cautious on the mortgage impairment charges, which so far have remained quite benign? And my fourth question is on the merchant banking division, which you already flagged yourself that was a disappointing result. Roughly 35% of your risk-weighted assets are tied up in that business. You're quite far away from your cost-income ambitions. So what kind of measures do you plan, or do you plan to accelerate anything to get this division more on a better return basis? Thank you.
Let me take your question on dividend. For prudency reasons, we have to take into account that we may be paying out a dividend over 2013. Decision for an interim dividend will be made in the last quarter. And of course, the real dividend will be decided after we presented our full year results. So this 300, which we take into account now, concerns not the first half year, but the whole year. You were a bit optimistic in your calculations on the percentage. We aim to gradually grow to a 40% payout ratio, but for this year it will probably be a bit lower, also to enable us to reach our zone of comfort in our Core 1 ratio as quickly as possible.
Shall I take the two other questions?
Yep.
Your question as to the risk-weighted assets, as to mortgages, in our IFR report, we state that we have 18.3 billion credit risk-weighted assets against residential mortgages. That does affect and include an impact of increased loss-given defaults, which, of course, is to be understood as a result of declined house prices. Your question as to the guidance we gave as to the impairments second half being higher than the first half, that mainly focuses on SME as well as mortgages. So in both portfolios we expect same level, but at least, let's say, same level, but higher than the first half.
And I shall take the last question on the merchant banking division. As you mentioned, the results are not positive there. That's clear. We also mentioned it in our press release. There are some special items involved, as you can see. So the decline of almost 200 million would result in a decline of 84 million net profit if you take out the special items. That is still, by the way, a clear decline, of course. It's partly related, as mentioned also, that we terminated non-client-related equity derivative business. But also, for the rest, we see across the board securities financing with lower margins. Private equity is mentioned. Where positive revaluations in 2012 were followed by negative revaluations this year. So it's actually across the board where we see not positive results in this business line. It's, by the way, not related to our two growth areas, international clearing and ECT. Those two are stable. But, however, this is an area of course, of full attention of us. We are working on that to improve the results of this part of the bank, and we hope to show you as soon as possible, that we are going in a better direction than where we are right now. But it's too early now to tell you exactly what kind of measures we will take here on a concrete basis at this moment in time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Lee Street from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thank you very much for holding this call. Two questions from me. Now, when I adjust for the one-off, it looks like impairments obviously increased quite a lot in the first half, but it looks like NPLs have only crept up a little bit and coverage has actually fallen. So I was just trying to work out, and there's a few bits to moving parts to reconcile, whether that means that the actual reserves or coverage you had on the exposures you written off was actually too low. That was my first question. And secondly, following up on one of the earlier questions on restructured loans, are you able to actually quantify in a euro value how many loans have actually been restructured within, say, SMEs, mortgages, you know, along a divisional basis? That'd be my two questions. Thank you.
To start with your last question, within mortgages, I was explaining that only for around 200 clients we have been restructuring mortgage loans. Your first question, I think the explanation there is because you indeed see some changing picture as to coverage ratio and impaired ratio as to commercial loans. The reason for that is that in that that bucket, and that is actually in the slide pack on page 11, the Greece and Madoff exposures, and therefore also the releases of impairments, are exactly in that commercial loans bucket. So that explains actually why you have seen the reduction of the impairment ratio, together actually also with the write-offs which we have taken as to commercial loans.
Okay. So would it be fair to say then, if you look at your average coverage ratios, they're in line really where you, when you have exposures that actually get written off, where the actual average write-offs are coming? Is that fair to say?
That's difficult to say, I think, because, I mean, don't forget there's always a timeline between the impairment taken and the net credit loss and the write-off. We have indeed on average 52% coverage. Bear in mind, and I think we already made that also in the investor presentation, that's also on 11 actually, due to our various portfolios which are collateralized in various ways, like mortgages, security financings, compared to commercial loans, our view actually is that it gives, I think, a very good view about the coverage ratio depending on the collateralization of the loans we have in the books.
Okay, that's right. And just one very quick one, if I may, just following off of the comments on leverage ratio. Obviously, you're at 3% fully loaded. Does that mean that you'd be looking at doing any new style additional Tier 1 securities to boost that in the near term? I think on some previous calls, going back a few quarters, you'd suggested that thing you're looking at. What's your current thinking there, please?
Well, you will notice that when we will do it.
Fair enough. Okay.
If we will do it.
Okay, thank you very much for your comment.
Sorry, but we can't give an answer to that.
No, thank you very much.
Thank you, and the next question comes from Heine Hacker from Kempen. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Two themes or questions, if I may. First of all, on your loan losses, they are now at something like close to 1.3% of risk-weighted assets, which is well above the ING level and the Rabo level. And also, the level is close to the level we had in the second half of last year, where there was some catching up to do, and still you expect a rise. So, and ING is expecting a stabilization at the high level of Q2. So I have a bit the impression that asset quality deterioration at your end is going faster than it appears. It's difficult to say because you don't know composition of portfolios, etc. But maybe you can comment on that. That is one question. My second question is, I just see on the headlines, I not have the television in front of me, that the Minister of Finance is talking as an IPO of your bank as a preferred way out, which is totally in line with your own views. But your ROE is currently pretty subdued due to these high loan losses, and you sound pretty cautious on the second half and on 2014. So would you envisage an IPO in such a climate? Also, if I see that the minister would hopes to fetch close to book value for your bank.
Well, let me take the IPO question. I think it's important that we get a green light in principle to go to the stock exchange. That is indeed what we want. In terms of the timing, the climate of the stock exchange and the economic developments and the results of the bank will play a role. But that's something to be discussed later after we have political clearance for listing to the stock exchange.
Shall I take the other question? Of course, it's always difficult to compare as with other banks, and to
to be very fair, we leave that to you actually to do that. But that, and then of course you are always aware that sometimes it's apples and pears. We comparing burn rates with cost of risk. So, but just to I think give some background as to the cost of risk of this bank and our guidance there going forward. There is at least one difference, I think, between the loan portfolio of ING as a whole and ourselves. That is that we are more, much more than ING focused and concentrated on the Dutch market. And that in itself, of course, means that we are also exposed in that sense a little bit more to the circumstances in the Dutch market.
Now, I appreciate it that you leave it to us analysts and that it's difficult to compare because of composition. But last year you were in line with Rabo and now you are clearly ahead. They're also purely domestically focused. Indeed, ING is more internationally. But I was just wondering if you yourself do try to get a finger behind it, because it tells you something about your risk policy and your risk acceptance, and whether your underwriting policies were right in the past, or whether you need to address that. So that's basically the background of my question.
It's very nice that you have the impression that we are as international as Rabo, but that's not the case. 80% of our, more than 80% of our revenues and assets is Dutch, and I think that percentage is much lower at Rabo, but certainly for ING. So our concentration on the Dutch market and the Dutch loans and the Dutch recession in combination with that leads to higher impairments than with other banks who have a broader international spread in terms of their loan book.
Thank you. And the next question comes from Anke Reingen from the Royal Bank of Canada. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. I just had two questions, please. The first is coming back on the SME loan loss charges. And I'm sorry if I missed it, but how much of the total loan loss charge in Q2 was actually with respect to the SMEs, and what's the resultant loan loss charge? And then just secondly, I was wondering, I read that the DNB will do a stress test in Q4, and I was just wondering if you have any more details you're willing to share with us. So is it focusing on certain pockets of the loan book, like Dutch mortgages or commercial real estate, and do you think that's going to be basically going to prepare you for the European asset quality review? Thank you.
As to your first question, we have not disclosed that. What is exactly the part of the SME impairments of our total impairments? I can tell you it's a large part, actually. As to your second question, we can never anticipate, of course, the outcome of stress tests, which are conducted at the request of the Dutch Central Bank. But as you know, we are, and we have actually, occasion by occasion, stress tests from the Dutch Central Bank, a macro stress test, reverse stress test. So we're very into that stress testing already. And yes, we, of course, think that the stress test of the Dutch Central Bank will be important in terms of the anticipated European bank supervision, which will also be applicable to ABN AMRO.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And the next question comes from George Mayo from Carlson Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, guys. I had a couple of questions on the capital structure. I mean, firstly, you've disclosed a fully loaded Basel III total capital of 13.7% with 11.5% from common equity and 2.2% made of Tier 2. When we look forward to on a medium-term basis, what is your target structure here? And, you know, how do the different bucket compositions look like between common equity, Tier 1, and Tier 2 capital? And my second question is on how are you thinking about non-Basel III eligible capital securities? For instance, in the UK, there's still very much the discussion between regulatory capital and securities that, despite not having regulatory capital, have some loss-absorbing features to it. So I'd be very interested in see how you are thinking about that.
Let me start with the first question around capital levels and composition.
Mm-hmm.
Up till now, we disclosed our ambition for the core capital ratio between 11.5% and 12.5%.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not yet in a position to give more disclosures on targets than this.
Okay, understood.
And with respect to your second question, I think we are at this moment in time looking at the Basel III, especially what's happening there at this moment in time.
Okay. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, sir. There seem to be no further questions in queue. Please go ahead with any closing remarks you may have.
Well, I would like to thank you for your attention and see you in half a year.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude the ABN AMRO analyst call held on the 23rd of August 2013. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.